When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, reader. I'm Cindy Burnett. Welcome to my award-winning podcast, Thoughts from a Page, which is a member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network. On the show, I chat with authors whose books I have enjoyed about their new releases, and I give you a peek behind the curtain of the publishing industry with my Behind the Scenes series. With so many books coming out weekly, it can be hard to decide what to read. So I find the best ones and share them with you. If you're looking for a community of readers, bonus content, and a chance to read books before they hit the shelves, I hope you'll consider joining my Patreon group, which is filled with a wonderful bunch of book lovers. The link to join is in the show notes. Today, Joe Piazza returns, this time to chat about The Sicilian Inheritance. I learned about this book many months ago because the publisher has been hyping it for quite some time. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I felt like I was transported to Sicily, as well as being completely intrigued with the idea that this is based on Joe's family history. Joe is a best-selling author, award-winning journalist, and critically acclaimed podcast creator. She lives in Philadelphia with her husband and three children. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
Hi there. I'm Heather Drago.
And I'm Sarah Saunders.
We host the podcast, That's a Hard No, about saying no and setting boundaries.
So you can become that true and empowered you that this world needs. Saying no isn't just okay.
It's the key to living an authentic, fulfilling life.
I'm a licensed professional clinical counselor. So while this podcast is in no way a replacement for one-on-one therapy, I suppose I know what I'm talking about.
I'd say so. We talk about learning to say no and set healthy boundaries and how it impacts mental health, physical health, relationships, parenthood, and more.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit our website, hardnopodcast.com.
We're here to help you find your no and say it unapologetically.
That's a hard no.
Welcome, Joe. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm so glad you're back. Last time you were here, you were with Christine, and so it's fun to get to talk to you on your own this time.
I know. It is fun, but also I will say that sometimes I still speak in the royal we, because Christine was my editor before she was my co-author, and I'm so used to doing interviews together that it's been very interesting to promote this book, The Sicilian Inheritance, without her, because I'm just so used to having her by my side all the time.
I can see that. And it's a bit of an adjustment for you.
It really is. But Christine has been a huge champion of this book from the beginning. So I feel like she is here with me in spirit, cheerleading me on.
So when you use the we, you can really mean it.
I really can.
Well, let's start out with you giving me a quick synopsis of The Sicilian Inheritance.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, The Sicilian Inheritance is the most personal novel that I've ever written. It's loosely based on my own great-great-grandmother's murder in Sicily. It's a story that's been passed down for 100 years in a game of telephone in my family. And for a long time, we didn't know anything except that she was murdered in Sicily and didn't make it to America to meet her husband and her children who came over before her. And I wanted to take that little nugget of what would it be like to be a woman left alone in Sicily and just go with it and create a novel. So I wove this dual timeline family mystery, which first and foremost, I want it to be an adventure. It is an escapist adventure to Sicily filled with delicious food and wine, and also these two compelling characters set 100 years apart. So we have the modern day character, Sarah Marsala, going back to Sicily to try to solve her own great-grandmother's murder so that she can claim her family's land and a potential inheritance and try to rebuild her life and reopen her restaurant in Philadelphia.
So did you always decide that it was going to be dual timeline?
No, I didn't. I mean, I started out, when I first started this book, I thought it was pure historical fiction. I thought it was all set in the past. And then I've spent a lot of time in Sicily. I've been back there about a dozen times. And I wanted to show what it is like now. And I also wanted to write a book that would really make the reader want to visit Sicily. So that's when I started creating The Modern Day Woman and decided to have her go back to be the one to, for us to kind of accompany her to unravel this mystery for us.
And how closely did you stay to your family story?
Not at all, actually. So I knew nothing about Lorenza's actual death. And I didn't want to when I started writing because I wanted to write fiction. I wanted to enjoy letting the characters lead me where they wanted to go. I think that that is part of the magic of fiction. So I didn't do any research. I didn't inquire at all about what really happened to Lorenza. But I'm also a journalist, an incredibly thorough content creator. So after I turned in the book, I decided that I had to solve the real life murder. And I have been creating a true crime podcast for the past year that's a companion to the book where I go back to Sicily and solve Lorenza's murder.
Okay, that is so fun. And I'm not sure I knew that. I'm going to have to check it out.
The trailer dropped yesterday. It is brand new. I just got back from Sicily a week ago, actually, where I was in the court archives digging through homicide and mafia records that it took me a year to get into. But here's the crazy thing, okay? There's a plotline in The Sicilian Inheritance, the novel, where Serafina, our woman who lives about 100 years ago, is something of a healer and a witch. And I did know that it was rumored that my great-great-grandmother was a witch. But when I started doing this real story, I uncovered so much more. And a lot of the things that I imagined in my head, in my fiction, are actually true in real life. And I do feel in a lot of ways that Lorenza was trying to kind of find a way to cement her legacy and to let her story live on. Because frankly, we don't tell the stories of women. Too often we hear more about how they died and not how they lived.
Okay, that's fascinating. And I know you talk a little bit in the author's note about how your family has all these stories and they've been talked about and you hear it different ways at different times. Do you think any of that sunk into your fiction without you realizing it? Or you think it's just kismet that you made her a witch and that she actually could have been?
I think all of the things can be true, right? So I think that like little things that I didn't even remember sunk into my consciousness. And then I also think that certain things were kind of kismet and that perhaps we share some of this Sicilian witchiness that just kind of helps us channel these kinds of stories.
Well, and I'm so intrigued with Sicily. I've never been there. It sounds like you've been there a lot. But I think it's one of those places that is always in stories and is written about and people idealize it. And I'm just so interested because in your notes, you also say, and I'm going to get the exact right words here, that it is an intensely broken place. So I wanted to ask you about that. One, why you think people are so intrigued with Sicily and then what you mean by that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons that we're intrigued by Sicily, namely pop culture and the kind of danger that pop culture has put on the island of Sicily. You know, we look at movies like The Godfather, all of the mafia stories, The Sopranos, and you know, then the recent series White Lotus really, really gave Sicily a bump in tourism. But I think that Sicily is so fascinating because it's not Italy. It's not. I mean, it is, you go to Rome and you get something very polished and perfect. And Sicily is the exact opposite of that. It is rough and it is rugged. And a lot more people speak English there than they did the first time that I visited. But you really do need a working knowledge of Italian to get around. A lot of people still speak in a Sicilian dialect. Most places still only take cash. And it's a place that isn't easy to navigate, like a lot of Europe is these days, but it like reveals itself to you in ways when you're least expecting it. My favorite story about one visit to Sicily was that, and I have like bits and pieces of this in the novel, we're driving around trying to find this winery that we were told was on the side of Mount Etna. We had a 3-month-old baby. He's screaming in the backseat of the car. We're driving past these houses that all look abandoned. Like they look like someone may have like lit a bomb inside. And I'm like, this winery doesn't exist. We're not going to find it. All of a sudden, we take a turn and the most gorgeous building I've ever seen in my entire life just reveals itself with a massive view of the volcano. We go inside. The owner of the winery takes my baby out of my arms, kisses him on both cheeks, and says, "You enjoy your wine. I take the baby now." Completely unexpected and magical. But after, you know, taking this trip where we're like, okay, you know, we may be murdered on the side of this road.
I love that. It does seem that you were able to translate that to the page. And it made me even more curious to go there. And yes, I agree with White Lotus. And I feel like other things have been set there too. And I loved all of your Godfather references throughout the book. It was cracking me up.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, my dad loved the movie The Godfather. My family loves The Godfather. It's so funny when you go to Sicily because they do not love the movie The Godfather. I was just in the town of Corleone where they, you know, allegedly the family and The Godfather is from. And they have a museum there called the No Mafia Museum. And they don't want to call it the Mafia Museum because the mafia, the idea of it is very shameful and they're trying to eradicate it. So they're like, this is not a museum honoring the mafia. It's a museum about how to get rid of the mafia. And there's a whole wall there with pictures from the movie The Godfather and of Francis Ford Coppola and Mario Puzo, but it's a wall of shame.
Okay, I love that. And yeah. I could gather that from the way you incorporated into the book that those in Sicily were not as excited about The Godfather as people in the U.S.
No, not at all. I mean, the mafia is something completely different than Americans think it is. It's really, in a lot of ways, it's still a way of life for some Sicilians, but the mafia also controls a lot of very large corporations, government institutions. They've infiltrated a lot of aspects of Sicilian life, and it's a real love-hate relationship with the mafia on the island. But what you also have to understand about Sicily, and I try to talk about this in the book, because as much as I want the Sicilian inheritance to be an escapist adventure and a murder mystery to unravel, I want people to walk away feeling like they learned something. And Sicily as an island has been conquered by almost more people than any other place in the world. And they've absorbed all these cultures and they've been beaten down by all of these cultures. And the mafia arose as a way for the poorer people of the island to try to take control of their lives. And so it has that history, too, that I think is important for people to know about.
And I think you did a great job of incorporating that into the book without it seeming like a history lesson.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And I really do want readers, I want readers to want to go to Sicily so bad. I'm working on doing both a reader and a writer retreat in Sicily that I'm going to try to make an annual thing. I'd love to bring the two together because I think it's so interesting to have readers and writers interacting because writing is often such a lonely business. So I'm working on that right now.
Okay, I'm definitely down for that. So let me know.
Done.
And second, I agree with you on bringing readers and writers together because I think it's helpful for writers, but I think it's really helpful for readers as well.
Absolutely. And I love book events so much. I hate everything about Instagram except for the fact that I get to connect with readers on there. I mean, it really is the best part of my job. If I could just have the writing part, which I also love, I could write books all day, and then the connecting with readers and take out the middle part, which is, you know, me being a show pony on Instagram to try to help readers find the book, I would be so happy. Like, I just want the sandwich, but I just want the bread of the sandwich and not the middle.
I get that. It's a lot of work.
So much work. Content creation is so much work.
It really is. So Sicily, as a woman, especially in Serafina's time, did not seem like it was an easy place to be. But even today, it didn't necessarily seem like it was easy to be a woman in Sicily.
No. And it's not. In Serafina's time, you know, 100 years ago, it was definitely difficult. But the interesting thing about Serafina's time period, and I discovered this when I started digging into real Sicilian history, is that 1 million Sicilian men left for America. Many towns were predominantly women. And for the first time in these women's lives, they were taking on the jobs of the men. They were learning to read and write and do accounting, and they were free. They were free from getting pregnant every 10 months or so, and they were free from the bonds of being a wife. I mean, I discovered my own great-great-grandmother bought land on her own. And so they did have certain freedoms 100 years ago, and they're starting to get certain freedoms again. But for a very long time, it has been a very patriarchal society that definitely benefits men more than women. But one of the things that was very important for me to show in this is that so is America. And so we have our modern day woman, Sarah, who is an ambitious chef in Philadelphia, and the world is still difficult for her to be ambitious and to be a woman in the world that wants more. And I wanted to compare those two things to say, hey, we think that it's Sicily 100 years ago that is going to be so restrictive for women, but let's take a look at America today.
That's interesting. I guess I took that away from your book. And you're right, it can be difficult to be a woman today, but certainly it doesn't seem as difficult to me as it was for Serafina 100 years ago in Sicily.
Definitely harder, but still difficult.
No, I do agree. And it really depends on what you're looking at as well. Like some things are easier, some things are harder.
Absolutely.
And you talk about Sarah being a chef. How did you decide on that as her career?
Oh, well, she started out not as a chef, but just as a butcher, that she had an artisanal butcher shop. And I remember trying to think about what I wanted my modern day woman to do. And I wanted it to be something that we don't typically see women doing in books. You know, I came up on so many of the, you know, rom-coms of the 90s and 2000s, where every other woman is a journalist who works at a magazine and also lives in New York City. And I wanted to create a job that we don't typically see a woman doing, a butcher, and then also a chef. I mean, we don't see nearly as many women chefs as we do male chefs. But I also wanted a job that involved a lot of physical labor. I wanted Sarah to be strong. And I also wanted her to love food and to bring that love of food with her to Sicily so that the reader can enjoy the food through her. You know, in a lot of the books that I also read in the 90s and 2000s, it was a lot about women restricting their diets, counting calories. And I want Sarah to love eating. I want the food to come off of this page as if it were another character.
I figured that's probably why you chose that type of career for her, but I was very curious.
Yeah.
What surprised you the most when you were writing this one?
Oh my gosh. I mean, the characters really, they told me what they wanted this book to be. I did not outline this book. I knew where I wanted it to start and I knew where I wanted it to end. And I just sat down and started writing. And the character of Juicy, who is a supporting character in the modern timeline in Sicily, wasn't even in my mind to start with. And she came to me as I was starting to write and really became I think she has main character energy in the book, became a very important part of the book. And she just came out, popped out of thin air. Like she was just dying to be written. And I think that's really part of the fun of creating fiction, that the characters tell you exactly what they want to be. And they come in and they are very powerful.
And when you choose to write that way, do you end up down a lot of rabbit holes, down a lot of dead ends that you then have to kind of back it up a little bit and head in a different direction?
You know, with this one, I didn't. I really didn't. It flowed. I sit down and I write and I do about 50 pages before I go back and edit. And there were some things that I had to move around to make the two timelines like really sing together so that, you know, you felt like the right things were being revealed at the right time. But I didn't write myself into too many corners. And it's interesting because with my books with Christine, we do work from an outline, a very, very precise outline, because Christine would go insane if we didn't. And with those, even with an outline, we did end up backing ourselves into corners. I discovered a new word recently that I love. I was doing an event with Elle Casamano, who writes the Finley Donovan series. And she was like, okay, you're either a planner or a pantser. And I was like, what is a pantser? And she's like, a fly by the seat of your pantser. Which one are you? And I was like, I've never heard the word pantser, but I guess I'm like a pantser through and through. And I love it. And I'm getting a coffee mug with pantser put on it.
I am fascinated that you've never heard the word pantser.
I've never heard the word pantser. Where have I been?
I know, because that is a pretty common term. Like when people ask, are you a plotter or a pantser? Maybe because you've been a plotter up until now, you've just never had to worry about the pantser part.
I've never had to think about the pantsing.
And now you
can. Now I can't stop thinking about pantsing.
And now it's pantsing. Okay, I'm going to have to use that. I haven't heard that one before. Well, I do think there's some freedom in pantsing because you sit down and it just takes you where you want to go.
It's true. It's true. It really does. And for me, it's more fun and you allow for a little bit more magic in the process. And I really enjoyed that.
I bet. Well, who was the easiest character to write and who was the hardest?
Juicy was the easiest character to write, actually, because she was just so much fun. Serafina was the hardest because I have not written historical fiction before. And I wanted to make sure that her speech and her language was accurate for her time. So I did a lot of reading from the time period. I read a lot of novels from the time period. I read a lot of academic papers. And there were a couple anthropological studies of the rural Sicilian villages that had direct quotes in them. And I took some words from them. And so, yeah, I knew who I wanted Serafina to be, but it was hard for me to make sure that she felt real and authentic without being a caricature of what we think a Sicilian woman in the past would be.
And I think your readers will really appreciate that because when I'm reading historical fiction, which I do a lot, I really don't like it when I get pulled out by something that isn't from the time period or is not a correct fact or is an expression that was invented much later. So I'm sure people will appreciate your research.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. And I agree. And that's very, I also get pulled out that way. So I was very painstaking about it. The Sicilian is interesting because we had a copy editor who is American but lives in Italy. So she's fluent in Italian. And that was so helpful. My God, it was magical. And also just like knows Italy. So she caught things that were awesome. Like in one room, I had a closet and she's like, no, it would be a wardrobe. There's no closets in these old houses. And I'm like, you're so right. I didn't even think of it. But with the Sicilian dialect, you can't really fact check it. Like you hear it or you see it written in these old texts, but you're not going to find it on the internet.
Okay, that's absolutely fascinating. And I'm sure you were so grateful that you had her.
Oh my God, so grateful. So grateful. Like it changed. I mean, it really did change everything. She caught so many things that I think, well, and, you know, so many publishing houses have cut back on copy editing budgets. And so the fact that we had someone who was so good and so invested, I mean, it was just a marvel for me.
Absolutely. Well, I want to talk about your stunning cover. I just love it. Do you?
I'm obsessed with it. I'm so obsessed with this cover. They knocked it out of the park on the first try. They sent it over. I was like, yep, there we are. Thank you. This is perfect. I wanted something that was going to make you want to go live in that cover. One fun thing, and this is not a spoiler, the cover is a picture of the Quattro Canti, which is one of the oldest intersections in Palermo. And the building that she is leaning out of is a church. And after we already had the cover and I was in Palermo, I went inside of the church and there's no way that she could have easily gotten up to that window without a ladder. And so I wrote a ladder into that chapter. I asked them to open the book so that I could make it very accurate.
Okay, that's a fun fact.
Right? Yeah. And they did. They were like, oh, okay. Yeah. They're like, maybe people could just suspend belief. And I was like, well, what if they didn't have to? What if there's just a ladder? Put the ladder in.
Absolutely. And what about the title? Was that your working title or was it something you all came up with once you were closer in time to publishing?
No, it's actually always been the title of the book. It's crazy when I say this, but it's so true. Everything about creating this book has been very easy. Like it has felt very, very natural. The title came to me. The characters just kind of came to me. The publishing process itself was trickier than I expected because I haven't written historical fiction before. So there were some publishing houses that, despite the fact that we are not like them, sold hundreds of thousands of copies, were like, oh, this isn't what Joe writes. And I was like, okay. And they're like, but, you know, how do we market this if you're writing a new kind of book? And I'm like, you market it like a book. And Dutton really, really got it. And I've had a wonderful experience with them. But that was very interesting that, you know, some other houses really wanted me to stay in my lane. And I was like, I want to try a new lane.
That's fascinating to me because I know historically that has been the case, that publishing houses are very rigid about If you write mysteries, keep writing mysteries. If you write romance, keep writing romance. But it seems like there are enough authors breaking out now and crossing genres that I'm surprised that still publishing houses are wanting you to stay in your lane. But hopefully that will continue to broaden.
Hopefully it continues to broaden. And there are, but I've talked to a lot of those authors and, you know, they said they had the same challenges with doing it. They've gotten through it, but they still face the same challenges.
I think that's right. And often they're working with multiple publishing houses.
And I'm working with multiple publishing houses as well.
Right, exactly. Which is what you were saying, is that the people that you were working with before were like, stay in your lane, so you have to go someplace else. And I guess now that I'm thinking about it, most of the other authors are doing the same.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, before we wrap up, what have you read recently that you really liked?
Oh my gosh, I read so much and so often. I've been reading so many things that I really enjoy. You know, I just mentioned El Casimano and The Pantser. I finished up her most recent book, Finley Donovan Rolls the Dice. And I love that whole series. It is just, it is a fun and hilarious, but also cozy mystery series. And she told me that, you know, she had a hard time because it does straddle many different genres. And at first people were like, where does this go on the shelf? And she's like, on a bookshelf. And I recommend that series to anyone who is looking to get out of a reading slump, because I'm like, it is fun and light and you're going to love it. There's so many incredible books out there that are also kind of hard to read. I loved The Women. I loved Demon Copperhead. But I was pretty exhausted after reading them, especially given the state of the world. And so I love a lighter read right now. I constantly recommend T.J. Klune's House on the Cerulean Sea. I just think, you know, it brings so much joy. And then my favorite historical fiction of the past year was Patty Henry's Secret Book of Flora Lee.
So many people have recommended that one. It really resonated with readers.
It really did. And Patty is so wonderful. She's just such an ally for authors and for books. But that book also, it was different from a lot of the fiction in the kind of war genre. And I found it very hopeful and lovely.
I agree. My favorite of hers is Once Upon a Wardrobe, but I did really like Flora Lee as well.
I also love Once Upon a Wardrobe. I do. But yeah, Flora Lee, those are the books that I've like recently been hand selling. And I'm so lucky because I get sent a lot of books. So pretty much everyone in my neighborhood knows that. And they come to me when they're about to go on vacation. And I'm like, you can go down into my book coven. And they get to take books away.
I have a little free library. So I end up passing my extras or the ones that are duplicates or I really liked, but I'm not going to hold on to, into my little free library as well. Oh, so I get that. But I don't have a book coven.
I'm dying for my husband to make me the little free library. That's on next on his project list.
It will be very popular because you receive so many books.
I know. I'm like, my goal is for this to be like the sexiest little free library in Philadelphia.
Well, Joe, as always, it's delightful to chat with you. Thank you so much for coming on Thoughts from a Page.
Oh my gosh, I loved it. This was so much fun.
Hello. Welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book, and together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.
Coming up on 5-Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5-Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.
Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. I would love to connect with you on Instagram or Facebook, where you can find me at Thoughts from a Page. If you enjoy the show, please consider joining my Patreon group to access bonus content and support the podcast. If you have a moment to rate the show or subscribe to it wherever you listen to your podcasts, I would really appreciate it. It makes a big difference. And please tell all of your friends about Thoughts from a Page. Word of mouth does wonders to help the show grow. The book discussed in this episode can be purchased at my bookshop storefront, and the link is in the show notes. I hope you'll tune in next time.
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, I think that was good enough.
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right.
I've never done it.
Right.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.